You should also audition for Untitled Hamlet Play, by the way.
Go the distance.
I wasn't just asking Michaela.
I will find my hero's welcome right.
I can't have that. I can't.
Long.
Yeah, okay.
Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that asks the question, would you like no opponents, but no fish, or unlimited fish, but no fish? I'm your host, Steven Levine, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared, fish?
If you give him out a fish, he'll eat for a day. If you give him out a Boston Rob, he'll tell you you can't eat it.
Oh, but I want that fish. A little salmon.
A little salmon. I don't know if he was right or not.
I gotta go with Ralph on this one.
Probably.
Well, here, okay, I need
Get into it in the episode.
Yeah. I need more context, I
Same.
Guess we'll go there.
Because the moment that he said no, I jumped back to Bruce eating, being like, yeah, you can just eat raw fish, with Ralph being like, yeah, it's fine. But also probably more of a control thing. But I don't know, I'm really scared of food poisoning.
I think that's fair.
There's a lot of context needed.
How you doing, Jared?
I'm doing okay. I had something I wanted to rant about, but I don't remember what it was. So that's not helpful.
Oh, okay.
Who's to say? Yeah. Probably something to do with AI bullshit again. Man, the bubble. Sometimes needles can go in deeper in bubbles than you think before they pop, you know?
Stonks were interesting today.
Sure.
Mostly because of tariffs.
They always,
stupid tariffs.
Stonks go up, stonks go down.
Yeah.
Beastie Boys is forever.
The cycle of life. Stonks.
Stonks. But yeah, it's just, the scam has never been more obvious than it just every day, man.
Boy, that grift is really grifted.
I know what it was. It was because you just can't buy RAM anymore.
Yeah.
Because, oops, all the RAM's going to data centers. But here's the thing. The data centers don't exist yet because they can't. Because the entire fucking electrical grid would collapse if they built all the ones that they have, that they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sitting in a warehouse. And it's like, there was a thing that people were, and I don't remember the specifics of it, but months or years ago, where it was a hack, quote unquote, where it's you could basically make the ATM think that you had more money than you did by I don't remember what the trick was.
I remember this. It was a crime.
It was a crime. But that's what all the AI companies are doing, or at least what NVIDIA is doing with OpenAI, it would seem, because you just sell your chips to OpenAI who can't make them. And all of this is built on such a fucking shaky foundation that one crisis of confidence and that whole fucking house of cards just goes down.
Well, NVIDIA doesn't care. NVIDIA is just making, they're getting more money for these cards.
Right, but because they use that money they got from cards to buy a bunch of OpenAI.
Oh,
so
did
they're
they?
Paying themselves.
Oh, what a fun shell game we got going on here.
Right, and I should also just state, none of this is financial advice. I am certainly not an expert, and some of those details could be wrong. All of this stuff is third hand information. It is all very convoluted and complex in the ways that these, companies move money around and deals and all that kind of shit, but it doesn't give me great vibes.
What I do know is that it's impossible to buy, like you said, graphics cards, memory, chip.
Thank God you got your computer, and thank God I built mine a couple years ago, and it was state-of-the-art at the time, so it can last me a while.
I quite literally took the advice of my IT guy, who's like, do it now. You're not going to get a better deal than this. And he was right. I was reading today that all of the Steam Decks are just out of stock.
Yeah. They don't have parts for them. I wanted a Steam Deck. I'm not going to be able to get one.
A device that is 4+ years old is entirely sold out.
Mm-hmm.
Their upcoming Steam, what is it? Steam
Cube or Cubes. Whatever.
Steam Cube. Who knows? I don't think things will come out as scheduled, as they're supposed to. we just are living in this, can't do it now.
Yeah, for now.
For now.
It's just, like, if you just stop and think about it for, like, a minute, I don't understand how you as an investor are like, I want to put all my money in. And maybe they all know. Maybe it's the kind of thing where it's like, well, yeah, but I'm going to be smarter than everybody else and I'll pull my money out at the right time. Like, maybe it truly is just a game of, like, musical chairs.
Jared, it's too big to fail.
There isn't enough money in the world to bail it out.
It's too big to fail.
It's not. It's nothing.
That's a famous line, you see.
Yeah, oh, yes, it is. There's just, it's the machine is always wrong. And I work not always. If it was always wrong, that would actually be easier because it's inconsistently wrong. And it will just lie about stuff. I saw a story that somebody had been, like, they had asked this, like, AI to like, identify trends and stuff. And so, like, their company made the decisions based on that. And then they realized later, like, they had to like, went through the data themselves and were like, wait, they're using numbers that don't exist and aren't in here. And they, like, asked the AI about it. And the AI is like, oh, yeah, I made those up. Just made them up.
Cool.
From fucking whole cloth.
We have a fun little email about this that will also fit into this category. So when we get there, we'll get there.
It's, yeah. Yep. That's my soapbox. And the company I work at is using it in a lot of ways I think are dumb. In some ways that are actually useful, because I don't think it's like, it's not like a fucking NFT that there's just no purpose for it at all. Like, there's some areas that it's like genuinely helpful, but it doesn't learn. It just makes different mistakes. That's it.
Don't we all?
I've been using it the same way for a couple of years for a repeatable task that is actually quite helpful that I kind of have to at my job. I would say 1 out of 5 times it still makes a mistake and I have to go and fix it myself.
I have one very specific task that I need it to do, and you're right. Sometimes it gets it wrong. So I'm constantly checking it. So am I saving time? I don't know.
No, but it's a great excuse for like executives and bosses to be like, oh, now that your workflow is optimized, I can give you more work. And you go, but it's not actually. It's like an intern that's drunk and I have to constantly fix everything. And you go, yeah, yeah, but now you can just do more. You just do more now, right? Okay, that's it.
I'm going to let you live in this world
for a bit. I'm done. How are you doing, Steven? How's your week?
Doing all right. I'm out of energy. I am just, it's Monday, it's cold, like, we've dipped back into winter.
You fell for the false spring.
I did.
Yep. The trick is to enjoy it and know that it's temporary.
Yeah.
But,
I don't know. I'm also trying to eat better and, like, work out more. Just, what a bummer.
I had a salad for lunch, so I got McDonald's for dinner.
Mm.
Balance, it's important.
I think my biggest problem is I shouldn't be doing this during winter time because winter time is so hard to get up and go to gym.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have to fight that urge, like, oh, but cold. Aww.
And again, this has been a particularly brutal winter.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, have a donut if you need to. Let me be the devil on your shoulder.
Or the angle. For reference, that is a joke. I do not actually think that that is what that is.
I could be your devil or your angle.
I could be your angle, where that's from. Baby.
Like, I know it's a meme.
I think it's an internet meme.
Yeah. Wow. Oral storytelling at work. Just passed down.
Jared.
Steven.
There was some Survivor drama today.
Oh?
So you remember... and this is actually Survivor drama that we can talk about because it's two players that have not done anything between when they played and now.
Okay.
So remember a little while ago when I talked about the Stephanie LaGrossa, Eliza stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was a follow-up today.
Oh.
Eliza went whole ham. Now that I say that, whole ham is probably not the words I should be using.
Whole hog is the word, is the term you're looking for.
Either way, I'll show you the video and then you'll be like, oh yeah, okay, poor choice of words.
Okay. Give me the TLDR of their scrap.
Yeah.
I think there was like some accusations of anti-Semitism or something like that.
Yeah. So, I'm actually going to let the video do its speaking. So if anyone wants to know what we're watching, Eliza posted a TikTok today. And if you're any bit connected to the Survivor community, you've probably seen this video today. So I'm going to pause this. And Jared.
We should put it in the show notes as well.
Sure.
5 minutes later.
So Jared, we watched that whole video.
Hell yeah. Good for Eliza.
Yeah. She goes in. She goes... I mean, she comes with receipts.
Yeah, I mean, like, goes in implies a level of, like, oh, how dare you? Like, it was Fair. Just like, hey, here's my case.
Yeah.
And it's a good one.
It's a good case.
Yeah, and I also, listen, they both come from a very similar era of Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
One of them looks a lot like herself. One of them looks like a plastic MAGA Barbie and looks horrible. I mean, that's one TikTok where she was clearly sloshed.
She was sloshed off her brain.
Evil ages you. Like, yeah.
Sure.
No, I mean, that's not the most important thing. It's just like, why does everyone who joins... I mean, it is gendered because conservative politics are very gender norm-based. But, like, when's the last time you saw a MAGA woman without a lot of plastic surgery? MAGA face is like a known thing. Stephanie's got the MAGA face going on, but yeah, man, that's she makes a good case for the through line of all the ways CBS is actively capitulating to the Trump administration.
Yeah.
And tying that to Stephanie, who is, I mean, it does make a little bit of sense, right? Like it goes into that case. Like, I don't know the rest of the casting for 50, obviously, but Stephanie being somebody that is openly pro-Trump administration probably did not hurt her chances for being cast in Survivor 50.
Yeah.
I guess is what I'll say.
Yeah. And again, Eliza always been one to stir the pot. In this way, I'm saying in a good way, like she's saying what needs to be said.
Yeah, I mean, she wants to hold truth to power.
Yeah.
That's not always the good thing to do in Survivor. Like, sorry, not always a good thing to do while you are playing the game of Survivor. Correct. Because it will get you voted out.
Correct.
You have to be sneakier. But
in life, I stand it.
Oh, yeah.
I stand it real good.
For sure. And everything she's like, she had some really powerful language in there of like, you know, your like who you platform is your politics, who you surround yourself with is your politics, which is just a modern way of saying the measure of a man is the company he keeps. And that has been a thing we have known as humans for a very long time.
Yeah. So
Eliza seems cool.
Eliza does seem cool.
There's a certain type of lawyer that doesn't make the best Survivor contestant. We have one on this season. Eliza and Dave are very similar in a lot of ways.
they're firebrands. They're good with their words. They're good at yeah.
And also to point out, like, if you didn't watch that TikTok or haven't seen the controversy, like, calls Eliza out for being Jewish.
Yeah, a crazy thing.
And part of the 1%, which maybe that second part is true. I don't remember Eliza's, like, family background. But it, like, ties those two things together.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, because she is Jewish, therefore she is rich. And it's man.
That there is a problem.
And that's not an accident. Like, that's not, it's not like she, like, didn't mean to do it. That was, like, that was the formed thought. That, just insane.
Yeah.
Well, I hope she gets voted out first. I won't know for a long time.
Me too. let me just put it this way. I did not take her in my Survivor Fantasy League.
Sure.
Let's go with that.
I mean, I guess, who knows? Maybe there's somebody even worse than Stephanie on 50, for all I know.
Yeah, so... We're recording this on Monday. First episode's on Wednesday. Get ready for that.
Oh, yeah. This will be out by that point.
This will be out. You know what else will be out? Emails. If you want to email us, feel free to do so. SurvivorTBT@gmail.com. Don't shake your head at me. Or you can message us at u/SurvivorTBT on Reddit. Go to our subreddit, SurvivorTBT Podcast. You can follow us on Patreon. Patreon's a place that we do things. We just watched a movie. It was a great movie.
It was good. Yeah.
We had a good time.
Double Indemnity.
Double Moeda.
I did not expect a murder about insurance because I didn't know what double indemnity was.
Speaking of, first email from Josh. Josh says, glad to see you enjoyed my film recommendation of Double Indemnity. While I wouldn't personally call a film starring three famous stars written by a famous author and directed by someone who many consider one of the greatest directors of all time underrated, it definitely is not well known to non-movie fans under a certain age.
Maybe better say, like, forgotten.
The film was nominated for Best Picture, and Barbara Stanwyck was nominated for Best Actress. It was also named the 29th greatest film of all time by the American Film Institute.
Wow.
Billy Wilder, who was nominated for Best Director for this and is more well known for films like Sunset Boulevard, The Apartment, and Some Like It Hot.
Mm. See, yeah, that's the thing where it's kind of forgotten. At least, you know, it's not in the cultural context. You say Sunset Boulevard, people know what that is. You say Some Like It Hot, people know what that is.
If you ever rewatch the early Simpsons episodes, a lot of his films are referenced in things that probably went over most kids' heads. When I watch, like, Family Guy, like, early Family Guy, a lot of those references, same idea, went over my head.
Yeah.
Pulling from old media, pulling from old musicals especially.
Oh, yeah.
Seth MacFarlane loves that shit. In particular, Edward G. Robinson, who was the head insurance man in the film, his voice was used as the inspiration for Chief Wiggum, which they make fun of from time to time in clips like this one. The Simpsons. All right. Here are three film recommendations I think would be interesting to add to the Patreon wheel. Oh, yes, this was the other thing I was going to do. If you wish to join the Patreon at the $5 tier, applications are now open for our next Patreon wheel. Go recommend things for us to put on. So I will put these on. Some Like It Hot. This is a Billy Wilder film where I think you'll have a bit more to talk about. It's also a comedy.
We had so much to talk about.
Yeah, we could have gone for a long time. It's also a comedy, so hopefully you'll have more fun.
Ooh.
It served.
I also had a lot of fun. What the hell?
It served as a major inspiration to comedy films you may have seen where men dress in drag, including Mrs. Doubtfire, Tootsie, and Tu Wong Fu. I don't know what that last one is. Do you?
I've heard of it before. I also know the poster for Some Like It Hot. I feel like I've seen that referenced a million different places.
It was named by the American Film Institute as the 22nd greatest film of all time. Two, Finder's Fee. This was Jeff Probst's attempt to break into Hollywood after the success of Borneo in Australia. He wrote and directed this film.
No, that's not going on the Patreon wheel. That's going to be a bonus episode. I'm so sorry.
Heard. Three, They Live. I'm only including this because Jared quotes/references the I'm here to chew bubblegum and kick ass line a lot.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if he knew it, where it actually originated from.
Nope.
If neither of you have seen this film, I think you'd probably enjoy it.
Duke Nukem was a cultural sieve of a bunch of different references of things that I don't actually know.
And now you'll know at some point. Cool. Thank
Getting
you, Josh.
Cultured.
Getting you, cultured. Josh. One Josh at a time. From Lilith. Two emails from Lilith. First one. Hi, this is Lilith. How was Skinny Ryan number 95 when Before Pearl Islands were six seasons of 16 contestants? 6 times 16 equals 96. Shouldn't 95 be Matthew from Amazon? Well, here's the thing, you see. In our hastily thrown together because we had no emails, I used ChatGPT.
And it's always wrong.
Wouldn't you know it?
My favorite thing is that you say hastily thrown together like we didn't have time. Like we could have just taken 10 minutes and then done it.
No.
But
I'm not wasting time to do a thing when I can waste time to do a thing wrong.
You know what? With minus AI, and that is my philosophy.
Damn it. Other email. Random Survivor Tribe game. Hi, this is Lilith. I decided to play your Random Survivor Tribe game myself to generate my own tribe and see if it'd be better than yours. After all, every season with tribes of six has three starting tribes. There you go. Hmm. I ended up with Liz from Survivor Samoa, Michelle from Survivor Fiji. I guess there's two of her this season to make up for being snubbed in second chances. Johnny Fairplay, Survivor Micronesia. Alex, Survivor Amazon.
Oh, and the Micronesia Johnny Fairplay. Ugh.
Alex from Survivor Amazon. Jenna from Survivor Amazon. I skipped Sylvia, Survivor Fiji. That's a fair skip.
Yeah.
And Clay from Survivor Thailand.
The quickest skip of all time. Well, no, there's a couple people that'd be a little quicker, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are your thoughts? I think this would be a Kasaya tier tribe, but also probably destroy both of your tribes in every challenge.
See, I don't think so. I don't know, man. I think that if we're going with Micronesia Johnny Fairplay, I think he probably quits, if not, like, gets voted out right away, because, again, he was, like, injured
but
going
maybe,
into that game.
Maybe there's no Yao Man to knock his tooth silly.
Yeah, I guess. Even still, he came in being like, yeah, but I shouldn't have been here. My girlfriend's about to have my kid. Oh, yeah. No. And the rest of that tribe is not exactly a physical powerhouse.
Alex is
that's
a powerhouse.
True. That's true.
Michelle, I think, has some physical prowess.
Your Michelles cancel each other out.
That's a good point.
I think that's a... I don't think those people would band together very well like Kasaya did. Because the thing with Kasaya was that they were all fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Aris.
I feel
so, like... Lilith, unless you are an Aris-level people binder, I don't know that that tribe is going to work.
Jenna's solid.
That's true.
Jenna and Alex, the two Amazon contestants, are solid. I do get the feeling that they would absolutely despise Johnny Fairplay.
Oh, yeah.
And Liz is just kind of there.
That's the thing, is that it's like... half or like or two of the six people are just like complete, like they want them out as quickly as possible. So I guess unless maybe an I-24 situation.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm really looking forward to it. I had Jared send me the list of who we picked, so I'm gonna put up a little graphic that I want to make.
Cool.
I'm excited to see that. Yeah, that's all our emails. Jared, anything else you want to say before we get into the episode?
No, let's just jump into it. There's a lot to talk about this episode.
A double vote episode?
The least consequential double vote episode of all time?
No one going home?
Fucking hell.
Bumper.
All right, so this episode came out on April 13th of 2011. Not a ton in the week between episodes, so I pulled two things. One is the Minsk metro bombing in Belarus, which killed 15 and injured over 200. And then, I don't know, this was apparently important enough to be a thing, so I felt like I'd throw it in. Gary Sinise, S-I-N-I-S-E. I know this is a name I've heard, but I can't... I
feel like it would be Sinise.
I feel like I know this actor, but I've only ever heard it out loud or read it and never put the two together, but whatever. Narrates the audiobook of John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men.
Okay.
It was important enough to be on there as like a big one. So I was like, okay, it must have been important for some reason. And maybe other people will know why. The top five movies were Source Code, Your Highness. We're going to talk about number three, Hannah, and Hop at number one. But number three, and the one we're talking about this week, Arthur. Steven, are you familiar with Arthur?
Every day when I'm walking down the street.
I'm going to tell you, last episode I said, wow, we're getting to the area where I know a lot of the movies. I know none of these five movies.
Is this a King Arthur movie?
No.
Oh, God.
Also, I think that era might be coming to an end. I think it was like 2 years, and I looked up, because I know Scott Pilgrim was in that era. Scott Pilgrim was 2010. So we skipped it because it was between Survivor seasons that it came out.
I mean, it famously did not do well in theaters.
It might have been rated well, though.
Yeah.
All that to say,
that's only reason Scott Pilgrim became as big as it was because of DVD sales.
Sure.
And I contributed to it because I couldn't see it in theaters because it didn't exist in my hometown.
I saw it in theaters. And that's why I was like, that's like the anchor point. That and the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie. Of like, that was when I was seeing a lot of movies, and I guess that was before. But anyway, Arthur. Irresponsible playboy Arthur Bock, Russell Brand, has always relied on two things to keep him out of real trouble. His great wealth and the advice of his lifelong nanny, Hobson, Helen Mirren. But now Arthur must undertake the most expensive risk of his life. He must choose between an arranged marriage that will keep him in the money, or a more modest life with the only woman, Greta Gerwig, he has ever loved. A remake of the 1981 Oscar-winning film. Which I don't remember them ever putting, like, a remake of in these synopses, but no. All right. What do you think is ran on Rotten Tomatoes, Steven?
I just want to put the juxtaposition of Greta Gerwig and Russell
Brand. Well, like, Greta Gerwig and Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Across from Russell Brand.
Well, I was going to say, like, champion of feminist rights, Greta Gerwig.
Oh, sure.
Versus known Trumper.
Well, yeah.
And kind of douchebag.
Kind of?
Very much douchebag. You're right. I don't know what this movie is. I feel like it's not amazing. So let's go a critic score of...
Does it help if I tell you the genre? It's romance.
Got it. Oh, really?
I mean, genres are made up anyway.
Yeah. All right. A critic score of 52. Audience score of 57.
You're too high.
I'm too high? Oh, no.
Critic score of 27.
Oh, shit.
Audience score of 44. You're a little closer on. The consensus being an irritating, unnecessary remake that demonstrates the libertine charm Russell Brand exudes in supporting roles turns against him when he's the star of the show.
Fair.
They're like, he is best helped in small servings.
I don't want to watch him for a long time. I just want to, like... have him there to be a quirky, fun little side adventure.
He's a character actor.
He is a foil.
Yes. And married Katy Perry, I think, at one point.
That is true.
Anyway, that's it.
All right. Let's get into the episode. Episode 9, The Buddy System.
There's so much to talk about this episode. two small things on the recap. They start the episode with, like, Sarita, like, in the challenge. But there's this weird graphic of, like, the rising sun over her. That it's only for like a second. It almost looks like a mistake, because if it was coming from the previous shot of like a rising sun, I'd be like, okay, but it's coming out of nowhere and it looks weird and sticks around for like a second.
Mm-hmm.
That aside, something in this recap led me to a question I don't think I've asked before. So when Boss and Rob and Matt were talking last episode and they're up on the rock and the ocean and all that, do producers ever tell contestants where to go have a conversation? Because I know they're never going to say, hey, Boss and Rob, go talk to Matt. Or at least I hope they're not doing that. And they'll pull people for confessionals. And obviously they're picking where the confessionals are happening. But if there's two people that, like, you know, are going to have a talk, or one of them goes to go have a talk, do you go like, hey, we have this great location, just go talk over there?
Potentially. I don't think they would ever, like, say, you two go talk over there. I think it'd be closer to the second one that you said, where you're like, oh, hey, we're going to go talk. Camera producer going, oh, you want to go over there? That's a cool spot.
Yeah. Yeah, that
it's
makes
like
more
far,
sense.
Far enough away from people.
They had like an aerial of them talking, and I'm like, where the fuck did, how did they pull that off?
I had no idea.
At least I thought they did. Maybe I'm just misremembering that. Anyway.
All right. We jump right in. Matt, I'd like to congratulate myself for being the most naive person to play Survivor.
You're up there.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Blindsided twice by the same people is pretty rough, dude.
That is pretty rough. Eric would like to have a word, but...
ooh, that's true.
Getting hit twice by the same person, that's rough.
Yeah. I mean, to Matt's defense, nobody else has really had an opportunity to get hit twice by the same person.
Correct. Fool me once, shame on you. Twice, shame on me. I can't believe I was blindsided twice by the same person.
We said fool me once, shame on you kind of thing. I spent a lot of last episode dogging on Matt, deservedly.
Yeah.
I want to give him a little bit of credit, because I went kind of in on him about, like, you're putting everything in God's hands. It's in your hands and Boss and Rob's hands and the tribe's hands. And that is true. I will give Matt credit in that he doesn't try to go, God, why did you do this to me? Or God, you failed me. Or he goes, wow, I was stupid. God, let's see how you use my stupidity to help or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, he does take ownership over his own actions, which is something that I find is missing in a lot of those things that I ranted on last episode. So since I beat him up a lot last episode, I also want to give him a little bit of flowers there.
I do like the way that he takes this. I trust this is your will, God. I guess you wanted me to come back here. You're using my stupidity for your glory.
Yeah. I disagree, nice. Just in that, like, it was an entirely preventable mistake, only on your own, but it's a more healthy outlook.
It's teaching him a lesson.
Right. I mean, did he learn it?
Did
I don't know.
I feel like the second time around, certainly learned. Because clearly he didn't learn from it the first time, so maybe
sure.
We gotta teach him again.
But he could come back and make the same mistake again.
Three times? Would that be funny?
That would be fucking hilarious.
To come back and be like, all right, Rob, I'm back in the building again.
I'm back in the fucking building!
That's pretty good. That was a good Snap Cube impersonation.
That's one of my favorite sound bites of all time.
It is pretty good. All of the Snap Cube. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead to our promotions. Snap Cube Sonic. Just go watch like a quick montage of things from them. So funny. Anyway, Mike. Wow, smart play by them. Don't say them, says David. It was Rob.
Yeah, everyone kind of knows by now, huh? I think earlier in the season, I was like, it could be anybody on their tribe, or it could be more collaborative. And like, Rob was actually, I think, doing a pretty good job early of making it seem more collaborative.
Uh-huh.
That veil has fallen. He does not give a fuck anymore. He's letting everyone know that he is the leader and he is running this game.
I'm running this show. David says, I thought it was genius. It was like a mob movie. You welcome him in, have dinner, take him out to the fishing boat, and then kill him.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Everyone congratulated him for, wow, that was a great move. Cold-blooded, I mean, man.
The hidden genius of the move, or maybe not hidden, but the understated genius of it, is that it was also the least likely target for an idol play.
Yes.
The Zapateros weren't going to use it to protect Matt.
No. I mean... It's so hard because would it be smart to reel him in and say, hey, we want to protect you here. We want to make sure that you're good. But you're right. He was never on the radar. He never felt like he was in danger. He thought he was in this swing position.
No, and most of the Zapateras, at least on the surface, are good people. Julie kind of talks about it in this episode. She's like, I get it. It's a game, but like, oh my God, you're sending him back?
Yeah.
Like, I think that was so far, like,
how do you not have any feeling for a human being?
Right, yeah, exactly. It was so far beyond the pale to them that they were just like, they didn't even consider the fact that Matt wouldn't be here the next day.
Yeah, when people play like that, there's no breaking that loyalty, says Julie.
I disagree.
Hmm.
The thing that now I'm worried for Boston Rob is, and maybe this won't happen, but the harder you try to grip something, the more fragile it is. And Boston Rob has a lot of, like, I think I said earlier in the season that, like, he hasn't been controlling in the past. Now he's, like, fully on it. Like, he is...
The fish would agree.
Yes. To the point that it's almost a little uncomfortable at times, to be honest, and Zapatero kind of calls it a cult, and it feels kind of cult-esque.
Mm-hmm.
He has some advantages in that, like, there's no clear jumping in point. Like, Philip would be the clear jumping in point, but Philip's a psycho. So that's not an avenue. And then everyone else thinks that they're in the top three, and all of them have like a legitimate argument for it. It's actually, you mentioned Kasaya earlier. It's kind of like Kasaya, where it's like, well, who's on the bottom? I don't know. I don't even think they fucking know.
We don't want to think about that.
Boston Rob knows he's on the top.
Boston Rob will think about that for me.
And there's not like a, because it's six of them, there's not an easy like, oh, I'm going to try to grab this. Like, you're an odd number, sure, but there's not exactly like a clear 3-3. The gender lines are even. So there's not like a clear weak point to go after.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, the more you try to control people, they don't trust you anymore.
Right.
There's no level of trust. So all it takes is somebody like that is pure ambition and a little bit of cleverness to just find a way to like fucking break it apart. From the inside. It has to be somebody inside of Ometepe that does it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have someone that you're targeting as that person to do it?
I think it'd have to be Andrea.
Mm.
I mean, it could be Philip, but I wouldn't put my trust in Philip.
I don't think anyone would put their trust in Philip
right
now. I
don't think Philip puts his trust in Philip right now. So, like, I think it'd have to be Andrea. So I guess Andrea could grab Philip. Maybe you try to grab Grant and go, hey, he's going to take those girls. Let's get rid of him, but you have to be the last Zapatero remaining because I think they are going to pick off the next, what, two of them?
Okay. Well, Ralph, and everyone kind of feels this motion of, all right, I got to make a move here. I got to do something because otherwise we're just easy pickings. So let me try to make some inroads with these other people. And Ralph does that a little bit. He's like, hey, am I on the chopping block? And Ashley won't have any of it. She's like, I cannot talk about that.
There is no war in Bossing Se.
Yeah.
But also, like, what she says is, I don't know. And it's true. Like, Boston Rob says it later in the episode. He's like,
we don't decide until later.
We don't talk strategy until right before tribal.
Yep.
That's a good way to stop leaks.
And Ralph, in a way to put pressure on, goes, well, if you're in the final three, I'd vote for you.
That is desperation.
Yes.
To have to talk about, like, jury manipulation and you're one vote past the merge. Nobody's even gone home since the merge.
So Ashley and Natalie, like, look at each other in the most uncomfortable way. Like, 6-year-old man approaching college ladies at a bar, and then, like, how do we leave? Like, no thank you.
Yeah, because, you know, actually, they use cult leader for Boston Rob. That's actually not what it is. It's authoritarian. Like, we are getting into, like, the Pol Pot, like, turn in your neighbor style of leadership, because, like, that's what Natalie does. Mm. Natalie goes to Boston Rob and goes, hey, Ashley didn't tell you this, but I'm gonna tell you this. And Ashley gets kicked out of the top three.
I'm gonna go Kim Jong-un, because he would absolutely put his daughter in charge of his his power when he's done.
Sure.
He's such a girl dad.
I'm not engaging with this.
Okay, anyway. Yeah, they're like, oh, we haven't thought that far ahead yet. No, thank you. And yeah, then they disengage. Nothing was accomplished. But the effects are big here.
Yeah.
Because, well, one, Ralph's like, they won't let us know anything. David was also kind of like hovering around this, being like, you get one shot at it, and if you fail, you're going home.
Yeah, he's like, we get one shot to change their mind before it looks like you're pestering.
Yeah.
So don't blow it.
Yeah. He blew it.
He blew it immediately. He's like, I'm just, and there is an argument on both sides of, like, I'm making relationships versus, like, don't get caught trying too early, too hard. Although, like, to argue against David for a minute, if you can call your shot and plant that seed of doubt, then actually doing that early can be better.
Can be.
If Ralph had said something like, well, if I was up there, if I was in Boston Rob's shoes, I would take Philip, because who's going to vote for Philip? And then Philip sits out of the challenge. Maybe you actually start to make some ground up there.
Mm-hmm. So then, like you said, Rob says, we don't decide who goes until very last minute. No one talks to them alone. We use the buddy system from here on out.
It's genius, kind of.
But what if I have to go to the bathroom? Go together.
It's to get the optimized outcome of nobody talks to them or flips. It is on paper genius.
Mm-hmm.
It is, again, makes your authority very brittle and is also very patronizing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that the Zapatera jury, if you're going to send them all to the jury, are going to like being patronized very much.
Mm.
And you, Boston Rob, are the one who is the figurehead of that. And they can all throw you under the bus for it. And sure, they should, if you get to final three. Like, now, Boston Rob, you're looking at an All-Stars finale again. Is that what you want?
Everybody hates you.
And you can't marry the finalist this time.
What?
You can't marry the actual person who wins.
Damn it. That's what you think.
Well, I guess depending on who wins, and then in a few years, I guess he could, if anybody. Well, because gay marriage isn't legal in 2011.
Oh, okay.
Yet.
That's fair.
It'd be a few years still, so.
Just think about that great Boston Rob Grant wedding.
Now, at this point, he married Jeff.
But yeah, you're right. Anyway, Rob goes on to explain that all of this accomplished the goal. Bring Ometepe closer together. We have to continue this us versus them mentality. We're in separate shelters. We have separate eating times. I want my tribe to hate Zapatero.
He's going borderline like Stanford Prison Experiment. It's kind of insane. And this is Boston Rob's like the best at getting an outcome. Boston Rob is one of the worst at thinking of the secondary and tertiary effects of getting that outcome.
It's us versus them, and we're better than them, and I want them to be arrogant about it. And they will, but I won't, because I want their votes in the end.
I don't think that's how you get them. Not from these, not from this group of people.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll I don't know. There's just, he's so paranoid.
Yeah.
And I mean, rightfully so.
This is like his MO. He's been paranoid like all the time.
Yeah.
I think it's also brought on from how he went out last time.
Right.
Of he didn't have control, therefore he went home. Now he's like, I am controlling from the get-go.
Well, I think, yeah, All-Stars, he was a little more controlling, and he's like, I'm gonna back off, and like, these are all adults, and I trust them, and I know them,
mistakes.
And they'll make their own decisions. And then he got burned. He's like, nope, no one's allowed to make their own decisions anymore.
I make your decisions for you, damn it. Natalie pulls him aside and is like, hey, did Ashley tell you about what Ralph said? It's like, no. Well, Ralph said he'd vote for Ashley in the end. And she said that Rob didn't need to know.
Which, I mean, is honestly, like, would you tell Boston Rob?
No.
No, because, hey, guess who just told Boston Rob something? Matt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would I tell him?
I don't think you say anything, but now the seed is there because Natalie ran and told.
Mm-hmm. It's a genius play by Natalie.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it was supposed to be or not, whether it was intentional to throw Ashley into the bus, or if it was just a, well, I don't, you know, prisoner's dilemma, I can't trust that Ashley won't say something, so I should just say something. Either way, great move by her.
And Rob breaks it down for us. He thinks, he being Ralph, thinks I won't vote him out because I don't want him on the jury. Ha, joke's on him. I will. And Ashley isn't going to be there with me because of what you just said, and it's all your fault.
The Mad King Boston Rob is already starting to spiral.
You have to tell me everything. It's my game. I'm in charge.
He's fucking holed up at Dunsen Ane. He's like, nothing can kill me.
And then we get to an immunity challenge. One, Philip shows up wearing a feather on his head.
Yeah. Cool, man.
It's like a feather with like a band around it.
It's the band I mentioned last episode. I was like, why is he wearing a black headband and then he has his buff around his wrist?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Jeff goes, hey, Philip, you have a collision with a hawk? What's the feather for? Yes, I asked for a sign. Out of thin air appeared this feather.
I'm so fucking over this. I'm so fucking over him. It was so fun for the first few episodes when I don't, like, I think he found a character he wanted to play. I think the first few episodes, he was just a fucking weird guy that didn't know how to behave and was, you know, the first few days of acclimating are rough. And now he's found this, like, coach but worse character. And I want him gone so badly. And he's going to make it to the final three. He's gone too far. There's no reason for anybody to get rid of him anymore.
Oh, because he's, like, goatee of all goats?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Every time he opens his mouth, I hear a bah. That's all I want to hear. All
right, bring him home then.
Somebody should do an edit of this season where every time Philip talks past a certain point, it's just, you just put a goat's bah over it.
I don't think you would miss much. Yeah, Philip goes on to say, hey, the signs are good for former Omotempo. Otempe.
Why can you not pronounce words? I don't want to make
it's
fun
a condition, Jared.
Well,
he
said. If there is something legitimate, like, I don't want to make fun of him. But the show's trying to.
Anyway, for the challenge, you have to dig to retrieve a club, smash a tile. First six to do that, move on to the next round. On the next round, you submerge your head into, like, a trough. You have to get water and then crawl under said trough and spit it in a tube.
Sure.
The top three for that go to solve a block puzzle, which is just an elaborate version of something we did early on in the season.
A smaller version.
Smaller, but bigger.
More pieces, smaller. Like, there's more, but they're smaller pieces.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One person can do it instead of a tribe.
Correct. Yeah. So, I'm just gonna read names unless you want to say something in particular.
The one thing I wanted to say was that once Natalie takes off the immunity necklace, or Jeff tells her to take it off or whatever, like, there's a reaction, like, people are shocked that they're playing for immunity. She brought the necklace.
She did bring the necklace.
Which means you're playing for immunity. People don't bring the necklace to reward challenges.
It could have been a manipulated shot.
It could have been, but it was a wide shot. It wasn't, like, close-up reaction. So I was like, did you guys just forget? Or do they bring the necklace to reward? I don't think they do.
I mean, they haven't had a quote-unquote reward challenge thus far this season.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
So maybe they were all expecting some sort of reward in this.
Yeah, I guess this would have been like their first individual reward. Yeah, okay. I also wanted to point out, I really do like this individual immunity necklace.
Yeah.
It's like five faces, but like they're like open. It's like opening up to reveal like different layers of the faces. I don't know. It just looks really cool. It looks like
it does.
Like non-specific, like inspired iconography.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like I went in on this exact thing last.
It is. Yeah, yeah. I just meant like, I don't think we talked about specifically about the necklace, and I really like the necklace. Maybe okay. You did. I don't remember. But I got a good look at it this time then.
Jeff almost gets absolutely cut up by ceramic tile.
Of course it was Boston Rob's, so Jeff's like, ha-ha.
I got too close. Too close to the sun.
He almost fangirls Boston Rob's ceramic tiles.
Grant, Rob, and Rob's tile is the one that he gets too close on. Ralph, Mike, David, and Julie are the six through this. And then in the second round, this looks like a football drill, and that's why Grant does this so well.
Yeah.
It's literally like, what's that drill called where you just do up-downs?
Burpees.
Burpees? I feel like we called it something else. But yeah, burpees qualify.
For us, it was burpees where you know, jump up, then you go down to a squat, hands on the ground, kick your legs back.
Yeah, that the burpee is like a physical.
Okay, great. Yeah. I didn't know if that was like a regional name for it.
No, that's fair. I guess we could have also had the same name. I believe that's a pretty standard physical exercise.
Okay. It's a dumb name, so I was like, "This it could very well be local to my area."
The three who solve that, or not solve that, the three who spit enough to get in.
You've solved my spit puzzle.
Blah. Grant, Mike, and David are in. So, one Ometepe, two Zapatera. Odds are good, except, all right, no, hold on. We have the puzzle guy.
Uh-huh.
Doing a puzzle.
Yep.
Against a wide receiver in football.
Yep.
And yet, the wide receiver wins. It doesn't come... Like, David isn't close on this.
No.
Mike gets close.
Yeah. Like,
he was within fighting distance.
And then, by the end of this episode, the three of them that are there, two of them are gone.
Yeah. David, the puzzle guy, can't do this.
I had a bad day.
Yeah. Grant wins. He runs right to Boston Rob for a hug after he wins.
Grant says he's his own man in this episode, but I don't know if that's necessarily true.
He made Dad proud.
Yeah.
You did so good, Grant.
You
cut the dreads.
I know that Grant wasn't a superstar in the NFL, but does $1 million mean that much to him? It's $1 million. Don't get me wrong. But like, even at this point in the NFL, a minimum contract has to be, what, $500,000 to $750,000? I'm not saying it's not impactful, but like compared to everyone else on this that's left on the season not named Boston Rob, like, does Grant needs the money the least, I would imagine.
So I have like particular insight into this because I was following Adam Thielen when he first sprung into the NFL, which is weirdly around this time.
Sorry, Steve, too. Because yes. Steve had a long career.
Steve had a long career. But I think Grant would probably fall into the league minimum areas. Sure. Of, I think it was around $250,000.
Oh, okay, that's less than I thought it was back then.
But I think it's also dependent on if you're like a practice squad player.
How long you've been in the league.
How long you've been in the league. And he wasn't in there for a particularly long time. I'm not saying that he made a comfortable salary.
Sure.
But not enough that he is probably set for life.
Okay, got it.
So Mike says he's so close. They were so close, and now we got to prepare for one of the five of us to go. Want to go crash their party, David? No, I don't want to do that. Hey, what's up with the flagpole? It's kind of weird looking.
There's this level that Zapatero gets close to, but again, I think they're just like too like polite and congenial people that if you... Have you seen The Boys?
I have seen The Boys. I haven't seen this last season of The Boys.
It wasn't... From what I didn't see all of it. What I saw like half and it wasn't very good. But remember, there was a very popular scene that went around of Homelander being like, sure, I'll lose everything, but then I've got nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where the Zapateras are. What do you have to lose? Like, yeah, you can just fuck with them.
Yeah.
You can go and interrupt all of their meetings. You could make their lives a living hell for every single day that that you are sharing this camp together.
By not actually interrupting and doing what they do here, it does kind of throw that chaos in there a little bit.
Oh, it makes Boston Rob look so small that they run back to check what they're digging.
Yeah. They're digging at the flag. They're digging at the flag.
And I think I've actually advocated for some level of this before, or at least questioned why people haven't done it. Why don't you just follow Russell around all day so mm-hmm. he can't find an idol when you want to get rid of him?
Mm-hmm.
Now I kind of see why. Because first of all, if you want to win the game, those people are going to be on the jury, and they're going to remember that you treated them like shit.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, now you can just, oh, if it wasn't for the fact that most of Zapatera are people that will go high when they go low, then, like, you can just go lower. You can just be shittier mm-hmm. to each other until it spirals out of control.
Yeah.
There's only two rules, apparently. You can't do physical violence, you can't split the money, so who knows what else you can get away with. You could burn the entire fucking shelter down. Fuck it.
We've seen it multiple times.
Cut the tarp up.
Not on purpose.
What are they going to do? They're going to vote you out anyway.
Yeah. Philip sprints straight to the flag while they're digging, and Rob gets the shovels out, and they continue digging while the Zapatera people just kind of like watch him with a little smirk on that. Like, there's nothing there. We know.
It's a small victory.
It's a small victory. Something to make you feel good, right? The Mariona crime syndicate got out the shovels.
It's pretty good. It's fun that they were just fucking with them just to fuck with them.
Yeah.
But I almost kind of wish they would have brought this up at Tribal. And maybe they did and just got cut out. That's always the caveat. Mm-hmm. But like, hey, all we did was dig in the sand and you guys all came running.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that not make you feel small?
Rob says, I can't shake this paranoia. It's what got me out last time. Yeah. Because Ralph played an idol already in this game, I think there is one back here. Like, played one last episode, so it's got to be something here somewhere.
I'm sure that people have been looking for it and just haven't found it, and why show us if they don't find it necessarily? Mm-hmm. I have to imagine that everybody's been looking for this idol.
Or it doesn't exist.
Right. They might be looking for an idol that doesn't exist, but I think everyone is looking for the idol at this point.
Yeah. So in their last minute gathering meeting, is it Mike or David? Well, who's the biggest threat? Who's the biggest threat in the game? But also, who could beat Matt at Redemption Island should also come into play here.
Well, it'll be both of them, apparently. I also love that everyone says Mike, and so Philip therefore instinctually says Dave. He just has to argue.
I gotta argue, man. I gotta put some fun twist into this conversation.
Everyone wants to be heard. Philip will make sure that he's heard.
An eagle came down and pooped on my left shoulder, and David usually sits on my left shoulder, you see. So I think we need to vote for David.
Sure.
For America and the eagle. Tribal Council. The first Tribal Council. Jeff says, your feather worked today, Philip.
So I want to give Philip some kudos here in being a trailblazer.
Go on.
It is not common for you to see non-white people pull the I have a Cherokee grandfather card. And Philip just blazing trails in new intersectional racism.
Sure.
What the fuck, man?
My great-great-grandfather, who was full-blooded Cherokee, Jessam Herring, he told me that's what would happen.
And I should also make it clear, that could be true. And if it is, like, okay, that's fine.
I don't doubt that he has Native American blood, Native American great-great-grandfather.
Yeah, I just can't trust anything he says. Because, he said grandfather, is that real? Or did he just, is it a family story that every single white person in the Midwest has? That's like, well, you know, your great-great-great-great-grandfather was one half Cherokee or like whatever. And did he just guss it up because everything that Philip says has to be at 100, not at what is actually maybe true? I don't know. If it's like actually like that's a part, integrated part of his family, I don't mean any disrespect. It's just because of everything else about him, I can't believe anything he says, and this seems like bullshit.
So Elizabeth Warren says that Ometepe will will live long in survivor lore.
Exactly my point. Yes. Okay.
Got it. Mike says there's no options. All of Zapatera just goes, what do we do here, man? We don't know. Julie says, well, we think it's obvious who's at the bottom of this six, but they have no clue. It's Philip. Everyone's just like, it's Philip. And Philip's like, I actually enjoy being at the bottom.
We're not doing phrasing anymore. I'm just, you know, let that one ride, Philip. Not gonna take a second crack at that.
It's a nice place to be.
You're not gonna take a second crack at that?
I'm always looking up and you're always getting... Okay. I'm always getting the wood and working on the fire. I did that all the time as a child. But now I have a new family here on Survivor that I'm doing the work for. But, okay. His story aside, this is exactly what he was mad about.
Uh-huh.
While he was at Ometepe.
I had that same note down.
So I
will actually give him some credit here. Because I don't... I think... And he kind of says, like, I should join a theater troupe when I'm back home or whatever. Not Black Cat Theater, I'll tell you that. But there is a level of, like, just saying, yeah, okay, is the best way to defuse their argument. Because he doesn't think that's true anymore. He now believes, according to the confessionals we've gotten, that he will be in the final three with Rob.
Mm-hmm.
And if you believe that to be true, then the Zapatera is going after you for being on the bottom when you actually believe that you are not on the bottom is the best place you can, or the best thing you have happen, because you don't want them to go after who's actually on the bottom, who I don't know who Philip thinks that is, probably Ashley.
Sure.
So I'll give him credit in that, but yeah. Okay, Philip.
Julie with the great comeback. Yeah, Matt thought you guys were his family too.
Dude, that was actually great.
It was cutting. It's so, like, to think of that in the moment, impressive.
Mm. Oh, I feel like she had that one locked in. Like, she's like, I'm gonna get my punch in.
When you hear your family. Ralph says, yeah, I may even get a feather tomorrow. Whoa, hold on. It takes determination and knowing when to hold your tongue to get a feather. Oh, so you know how to hold your tongue.
I would like to flash back to almost every tribal Ometepe went to. No, actually, maybe every single one, because they didn't go to that many. What the fuck, Phil?
Yeah, he may go out on a beach and a whole bird might fall down on him.
It's pretty good. Yep.
And then we get into, we're just dogpiling Philip here. It's an insecurity thing, says Mike. Oh, yeah. Me without a college degree worked for 4 different agencies and got the second highest medal given at peacetime.
Yeah, Mike says, like, he seems like a guy who's like, trying to find himself. And, like, I kind of agree with Mike's read, to be honest. Like, a guy who's just been kind of floundering is like, I guess this is me now in the game of Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's just, yeah, again, David,
it gets kind of nasty, but...
Just give it up, you sound like a lunatic. You sound like the bottom of a cesspool, says Philip.
Yeah, like, he's trying to get out of the cesspool. Sure. Like, you're on the bottom of the game, and you're trying to get up, and, like, whatever.
Cut to Steve. He never ceases to amaze me. Thank you, Steve. Yeah. And then we vote. Mike's voted out on a 6-5 line.
Yeah.
Everyone knew what this was going to be.
Yeah, the votes this episode are not particularly dramatic. I am glad that we got through 2 of them in 1 episode because, yeah. Because
we're cruising now.
Yep.
Get to the interesting things. The next morning, Rob says, you were a soldier. You're not the bottom. You're at the top. With me.
I want to point out, too, that the cutaway for the mid-episode, because they show the logo and Jeff has Jeff's voiceover that's usually, stay tuned for scenes from our next episode. It says, stay tuned as one more survivor is voted out. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much about the season that's so weird. You just, like, I know that's probably something they have done or will do in other seasons, but it's just, it's weird.
I think they do it because... Survivor is such a thing of routine now.
Yeah.
That when you throw it off and you go, oh, you saw someone get voted out, don't leave.
Don't leave. Don't turn off the TV.
We still got time.
You haven't seen the clock, but there's still half an hour left.
Rob says, Phyllis becoming a loyal soldier. I'm happy he's obeying. He'll be rewarded for it. He's not crazy. He's a little crazy, but he's playing crazy.
I think he's also a little... Maybe he's...
A little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah, I mean, Boston Rob, we've heard you say he's off his rocker for a long time, but now he's focused.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's locked in, so the crazy's below the surface a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Natalie and Philip to the end.
Yeah, I guess. I love that Boston Rob had the Blair Witch Trials confessional here with the camera like a foot from his face.
Yeah.
In the dark.
We're getting artistic with our photo shots here. Like you said, Philip says, should I join a local theater company? Everyone wants to stand at the final three with me. I'm polarizing, insulting. Boston Rob is thinking, who can stand next to me? But I got to make something happen. So, like, he's maybe thinking about taking out Boston Rob.
Yeah, but not now. He says not now.
Not now.
And this confessional is genuinely good. Like, Philip is at least... He can't win this game. There's no fucking way he can win this game. But I'm glad he's still playing it, because that's more entertaining than somebody that's just kind of there.
Yeah. This is where Ralph tries to... I'm going to talk to him. You get one shot. If it doesn't work, you're going. Don't do something stupid. But you got to make some moves. Ralph tries to insert himself into the conversation with Philip and Andrea, and they just shut it down immediately. Like, they want nothing to do with this Zapatero tribe. It's working to a T. Like, all of this Boston Rob, you go in pairs, you don't talk to them. Talk to them about the weather, talk to them about home. We're not talking to them about the game.
Which, like, Boston Rob's execution of it is authoritarian. Mm-hmm. There is a strategy of this that I think could work. It would have to be something that is like a group consensus and not being led by one person. But if you are really, like, if you are a locked in, like, tribe,
mm-hmm.
and you go, guys, listen, I don't want us to get divided. Let's just, you know, let's make a pact. And then, you know, once we're down to, like, there is a, like, I think if the Zapateras did this, like, if the tables were flipped and they were like, nope, because we are all sort of like equal in this alliance and we're power sharing and blah, blah, blah. Like, I think they all would actually believe that and it could work. I don't think it's going to work with one person decreeing it from on high.
I think there's always going to be someone who rises from the pool of people to become the target that people perceive as the ringleader.
Sure.
But yeah, it's hard to look away from that when it's the one guy who's played this game before.
Yeah. And more than anybody else up until this point.
Correct. David says something that I very much agree with here. When people don't want to play, it's not any fun.
Yeah.
Survivor, when you're just waiting to die, sounds like the worst thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know it's you. It's just a matter of time.
Well, and there's not even anything to talk about. Like, part of, like, we hear, again, the game is boring a lot of the time. Like, when you were out on the island, there's a lot of downtime where you're just bored. And I think sometimes maybe people get to the point where they're making dumb moves because they're just bored. And now you can't even talk, like, hypotheticals and strategy.
I'd much rather be blindsided than just shut out of anything.
Yeah. No, this is, like, demoralizing.
Yeah.
And kind of ugly without... We're in Air Bud territory for how to treat people. There's nothing in the rules that say you can't just create two camps with a line down the middle.
Okay, Jared asked me, he sent me a TikTok today about, like, the defining moments of our podcast and, like, episodes. Whatever episode we mentioned Air Bud rules,
yeah.
That seems to be load-bearing to our podcast. How many times can Air Bud come in to a show about Survivor?
It's the most important thing. What can you technically get away with?
Oh, my God. All right. Immunity number two. You're going to hang from a bar over water.
So, I understand why we're doing the food or compete thing.
Uh-huh.
It's a great way to break up a tribe that has all the power and does not want to break up in any way. However, it might be a little bit too early. I think they needed to wait one or two more votes. I know they wanted it, but...
I do think it's more effective when there are less people on Zapatero that you can vote out.
Yeah.
When it's everyone trying to stop a singular person, it does seem more effective.
Now, on the other side of that, holy shit, Boston Rob really does have this tribe on lockdown.
Yeah.
Because everyone but Philip competes.
Correct.
Because they don't want to be seen as betraying the group. Pol Pot has gotten his Cambodia.
Philip doesn't even care at this. Like,
well, Philip is cannot be controlled.
No. Clearly.
It's nuts, dude. Boston Rob says he's running with the army, and this is weird. This whole episode is weird.
See, Jared, you say that you don't understand why they did it. However, it gave the greatest subtitle that I have ever seen on a Survivor episode thus far. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, okay. So, while playing, everyone's hanging on the bar. They're doing their thing. 20 minutes in, they have to change to only legs. When they get to that 20-minute mark, the subtitle goes, elapsed time, 20 minutes. Elapsed burgers, 5.
I didn't see that. It's that's so good.
Because like it starts with the elapsed time, and then that fades away, and then it shows elapsed burgers in the same spot. I'm like,
genius.
Peak, way to go. There's a lot of back and forth between Philip and David while they're up on this perch.
Yeah. And then when they're down, Philip's like, oh, good game, whatever. I don't know.
He's just trying to get into his head. The defining moment is, I have no problem with Philip. I have lots of problems with David.
Okay.
It's just, like, nobody cares.
So by the transitive property, is Philip pro Sarita?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
That would be correct. Yeah, Dave, like, Philip calls out everything. He's, like, chirping from the sideline the entire time, trying to, like, make David overthink this. I also, when they switched to just legs, the people who did a single leg with the other leg crossed over, I was like, that's insanity.
No, I understood it. At first, I thought it was smart.
I get, like, it's a like, almost like a lock to keep you down.
It's that, and I, like, the women all could reach their own ankles or heels to grab onto it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't reach your own, like if you can't bend back that far, you're going to slip off. We saw it from Julie. Julie mm-hmm. slipped off pretty early. So like the one leg was, I think, probably your best bet. If you're somebody that can't reach back and grab your own legs.
Yeah. We get down to the point where it's just David left for the Zapatero people.
And then the three women of Ometepe. And this is just not a challenge. Like, the smaller you are, the easier this challenge is.
Correct. So David falls, and then it's just the three Ometepe women, and they're like, cool. Andrea literally asks for the win, and they're like, yeah, sure, why not? Cool.
It was cute.
It was nice. Afterward, everyone has to wobble back to the bench.
David especially.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as someone wins in our tribe, I'm happy, says Rob. Cool. So, Andrea wins. We get back to camp, and there are fish washed up on the shore. Lots and lots of fish. Like, I don't know what happened.
Well, they laid their net out on the rocks, I think.
Okay.
So, I think, like
tide
comes in, fish come in, tide goes out, fish stay in net, is, I think, what happened.
I have no idea. So, basically, who was it? Who gets really excited about this? Someone runs and like, Fash.
I don't remember who it was, but I know what moment you're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, it's Ralph. Ralph gets really excited about this. And he goes out and he's like holding these fish. Come look at all these fish. Great. Rob comes out. He's like, no, those have been dead for too long. You can't eat that.
I'm so torn. I mean, what I need to know is how long. Like, that's the question.
How long were they gone from this challenge? Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that drastically swings which side of that I'm going to be on, because I cannot imagine a fate on Survivor worse than having food poisoning.
Right.
But at the same time, Boss and Rob, I don't even know if he believes that it's going to be bad. Maybe he does, but he also...
He doesn't want us to participate in a thing for them.
He doesn't
want to
give any group bonding.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a weird hill to die on.
How long would you have had to have been gone for that challenge for you to, like, question eating that fish?
Oh, God, I don't even know. It's hard because I don't know how long it takes for fish to spoil. Like, from being alive to being spoiled. Like, I know about how, like, you, how long you shouldn't leave, like, you know, fish you buy in the store out on the counter. I don't know how long for, like, a fish on the rocks.
Here's my problem with this and why my brain is so skewed. Ice fishing. Ice fishing, people catch the fish and just fucking chuck it on the snow.
Steven.
Yeah.
What's the first word of that?
I know, I got it. This is why I'm explaining why my brain is skewed.
Got it. Okay. I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page. The fish in the freezer can last for several weeks.
Yes, that is what I'm getting at. When I fish just like normal fishing, there's usually a tank that you put the fish in until you get home and you can kill them properly.
Here's the thing. Do I think if I was on Survivor, would I be hungry enough that I'd risk it? Probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sitting at home when I can get McDonald's before we record this, I'm not touching those fish.
Around that 4 or 5 hour mark since you've been gone makes me go, okay, I might be a little concerned.
I do think smell has something to do with it, too.
Sure.
Like, I think that would be a good indicator for me.
Why not?
But then again, fish always kind of smell bad.
But they're also cooking it. Yeah. So it's a little better.
There are some once meat goes rancid, though.
I'm aware. All right. Anyway, let's just skip all that.
This
is just, again, throwing the divide here. And now we get to the point where, all right, is it David or is it Steve? We get rid of the biggest strategical threat or give the old dinosaur what he wants.
Just put him out of his misery.
Kill me.
This feels like the producer asked Boston Rob, well, if not David, like, can you weigh another option for us so that we can get
anything, please.
And I do wonder if, like, if the producers are willing to talk to people like Boston Rob more candidly about this stuff than they are first-time contestants. Like, he knows the drill.
Yeah.
We're like, you can probably just be a little more candid, like, hey, man, we want to get the shot here. Can you just, like, give us something more?
Give us something
like,
fun.
Yeah, like...
Put some spice on it.
Yeah.
We jump to tribal number 2. Philip says... For the first time in 22 seasons, there's a beautiful and glorious operation. And then they do stealth, us, one word at a time. Jared, this is the silliest bullshit I think I've seen.
I hate it. It's not even fun campy. It's just dumb.
It's pretty dumb.
First of all, why? Like, have you told the three girls about stealth, us? Because if not, wow, that's going to look really bad, huh? And he includes them at the very end.
He does.
Also, when the three muses were right there, or the three fates, or anything else, and he said, "What's
the three degrees?"
What the fuck does that mean? It's so bleh. And it's like, we're the best alliance of all time. You're hardly the best alliance on this season, let alone of all time.
I love this kind of stuff in confessional, out in the open. It's cringy as fuck.
It's because it's Philip.
Yeah.
It's cringy because it's Philip. Like, you're not the I-24. You're not the Black Widow Alliance. You aren't, like, that's not what y'all are packing. So shut up.
Yeah. We then take the moment and just continue to jab at Philip because he's the one dancing around like the court jester. So might as well throw him under the bus here.
He's a great lightning rod to have in your alliance.
Yeah.
I mean, he's unpredictable, which is a problem, and he's hard to live with. But, man, can you get away with murder while he's around? Because all eyes are on him.
You reckon his grandfather told him to sit on the bench and eat today?
That was pretty fucking good.
It's cutting.
That's pretty good.
Oof. Looking at the next time on of the episode...
It's rough.
It is rough. Because we're talking about, like, race and perceived things, and... I don't know that Philip is the best voice for any of this.
No, I think, like, I guess we'll talk about that right now. I mean, like, I try to bring up, like, implicit bias and stuff like that where they have it. I think Philip has such a forceful character that implicit bias is not even a factor with him. Like, I don't think anything about the way he behaves or treats people is affected by the race that he is. Like, he is just... He is a category of one. You don't see Philip and put stereotypes or implicit bias about black people onto Philip. You look at him and go, why is this weird cop yelling at me?
You're right. However, as we have learned over the last 5 to 10 years, it is something that cannot be looked past. Like, we have to acknowledge that that is part of the story and part of what going on.
Oh, and like, I'm sure there's stuff about his, like, upbringing that got him to where he is that is maybe even an interesting story, but I have not seen any evidence that the way that people treat him on the season has anything to do with his race. It is because of the way that he treats other people. Like, he talks down to the women. He does all this cringy shit like Stealth R Us. He is completely unreliable and untrustworthy at all times. He antagonizes people at challenges and at tribal. And it's like this giant elephant of Philip's actions with this tiny little hat it's wearing that is the race that he is.
Address me.
And so, like, yes, I don't, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm not the best messenger for this. Maybe I'm being insensitive, but I just, for almost any other contestant of color, I would care. But for Philip, I don't.
Fair. Let's hold that thought
until we
actually see what the argument is about.
Fair.
Yeah,
that could look really bad when I actually watch next episode.
Let's just hold the thought.
Fair.
And we'll come back to that.
I will say one last thing. You know who else couldn't stand Philip? Francesca.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. Francesca.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, anyway. Julie says this isn't a tribe, it's a cult. The numbers are insurmountable. Maybe the next phase of this game is the better option for us.
Which is Redemption Island, which is only for one of you. Maybe. I get... Oh, God.
One of him.
Oh, no. It better only be one of them.
And then David writes down for the vote, I think the funniest thing I've seen in a while.
Dude, it's pretty good.
I voted for Rob 4 times. Let's hope it counts.
Rob. Please count this as 4 votes.
Unfortunately, it does not count for 4 votes.
Jeff does not even have fun with it.
No.
Jeff is stoic and stone-faced the entire time talking about it.
You can kind of see, like, the crack of a smile, like, you're cheeky, but no, fuck you, this is my game.
He's too ritualistic about tribal and voting,
mm-hmm.
or I guess specifically the voting procedure.
Oh, yeah, that's
to
why
make a joke.
That's why we don't write down nicknames, Jared.
That's the last time I can think of, like, Jeff... I think there might have been one since Thailand where he had to be like, who is this? Like, who's this is bad handwriting. Somebody tell me who this is.
Yeah, even the fuck is this?
But the lash out at Clay is the last time I can really remember Jeff, like, not sticking to his rhythm for votes.
Valid. David's voted out on a 6-4 line.
Bye, David. Kind of.
Bye, David.
And then all three of them are going to fit in that tiny ass shelter together.
Yeah, that was the surprise, is he rocks up and you're like, what's going on? What do you think is going on here?
Because I thought that we were going to... I was like, God, they have so much to pack in this episode. You have a vote, Redemption Island, and then a vote.
Uh-huh.
And they said, what if we took the middle one? Just didn't worry about it.
Yeah.
I wonder if they planned on this being one episode, or if it became one episode because the votes were just really obvious.
I feel like it's probably that.
Yeah.
However, yeah. I think it's part of the overarching plan of the season as well. It fit together perfectly.
The tone of the game from pre-merge to now, even last episode to now, has gotten, like, dark and petty.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think I'm not big on the, like, oh, a bitter jury is invalid or anything, but, like, Zapatera is probably gonna be a really fucking bitter jury.
But you were having so much fun before, Jared.
I know I was. And now I'm sick of Philip.
Uh-oh.
And we are... Nobody's allowed to play the game right now.
Yeah.
Boston Rob has decreed that nobody's allowed to play Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
The beatings will continue until Zapatera is gone.
Your protagonist of the episode.
Boston Rob.
Yeah. It is.
Who else could it be? It's Boston Rob wearing 5 sock puppets for at least this episode.
Could be Lightning Rod Phillip.
It could be. He isn't doing anything, though.
Yeah.
I do think that, like, I don't want to make it sound like the other 5 players on Ometepe don't have any agency. They're not using their agency right now. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Why would you?
Why would you stick your neck out to be chopped off?
No. Boston Rob's making himself look bad, frankly. And why rock the boat? Things are going exactly how you want them to go for basically every single member of Ometepe. Maybe not Andrea, but Andrea definitely has to not show any signs of faltering because Matt almost fucked her over last episode.
Mm-hmm.
So just because they're not doing anything does not mean that I think that they are incapable of doing anything.
Yeah.
There's just no reason for them to.
Okay. Cool. Anything else you'd like to say before we shut this down?
You know, I want to give Boston Rob one more thing of credit.
Oh.
And I'm so back and forth on how he's playing this season, but I will say his information lockdown has been impeccable.
It's been great.
Nobody knows he has the idol. As far as we see, nobody even suspects it. Grant hasn't, maybe Grant suspects it. I don't know, but you know, but they probably looked for it together after he found it and like threw him off the scent. We get a lot of information about how Boston Rob feels about the game and who he's taking the final three, but only in confessionals.
Mm-hmm.
He told Natalie, he told Philip, he might have told others, but he's not overplaying his hand in terms of like information. And that would be really easy to do at this point in the game.
I want to thank anti-Russell Hance for finding an idol and not saying shit about it.
Right, yeah. Yes, he didn't immediately run and tell every single person on his fucking tribe he had the idol.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Because that's what I would do.
I don't...
Not run and tell. I would keep that shit locked down.
The thing is, I can't keep my own secrets.
Fair.
If you told me that you had an idol, ain't nobody gonna fucking know. If I find an idol, I'm gonna do my best, but somebody's probably gonna figure out before the sun goes down.
Heard. All right. Bumper. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast. Jared, what would you like to promote today?
Dimension 20.
Hmm.
I finally started watching it. I've seen Freshman Year, but I picked up Cloudward Ho. It's pretty good. I like it.
Who's the Cloudward Ho?
It's funny. They actually, because one of them made a joke at the beginning of it that it's Cloudward, comma Ho. That is what it's officially called. Cloudward Ho.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you, Steven?
Ooh. I'm going to promote...
You teased something earlier. You said get into your promotion. It was the Sonic stuff.
The fuck did I say about Sonic?
I'm back in the fucking building!
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, just go do a quick little look for a montage of SnapCube best Sonic moments.
I've seen the long monologue of like, I just want you all to know that Sonic's a little bitch or like whatever it is. So good.
Do you love me? Breathe if yes. Recite the Bible in Japanese if no.
That's right.
He does it. Is that really Japanese? How are you doing this? For my co-host Jared, this is Steven.
My host Steven, this is Jared. Arigato. Nani?
Oh.
Bye. Bye-bye.